Welcome to Four Chicks Chatting, a womanish podcast that will engage, excite, and empower you as we chat about business and personal development, all with a healthy dose of humor. And now it's time to check in with our chicks, Kathy, Kristen, Mary Fran, and Robin.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Four Chicks Chatting. We are here, the Four Chicks, today, and we are super excited because we are here to celebrate one of our own. Chick Kristen Smedley has just released an amazing book called Thriving Blind. It is detailing her journey, her children's journeys. Kristen has two blind sons as well as a sighted daughter. And has just an amazing story and has made it her mission to inspire and help other people who were left with the diagnosis that she was left with. And what I'm going to do to start this off, and I have to say these words came from the heart, I'm actually going to read my review of Kristen's book on Amazon, because in all truth, it's exactly how I feel about it. And when you read it, you will too. So let's go. Imagine learning that your precious four-month-old son is blind. Now imagine a few years later learning that your second son, also 4 months old, is blind as well. I don't know many who would survive such devastating news, yet after drying her tears and putting on her figurative battle gear, Mother Lioness Kristen Smedley decided that her sons would not only survive blindness, they would thrive. In this inspiring, motivational, poignant, and ultimately hopeful book, Kristen shares stories of the blind individuals who served as role models for her sons, showing them in no uncertain terms that they could be what they want, have what they want, and live fully, passionately, and genuinely in a sighted world. Full of hope for parents with blind or other special needs children, this book likewise inspires the sighted reader to set extraordinary expectations for his or her own life, showing us all that we can overcome our limitations and truly thrive. So, Kristen, I just want to say how incredibly proud of you we all are. Mm-hmm. And truly, 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 this book, while written for the blind community, does transcend that, because your journey is inspirational on so many levels. And I can say you've been an inspiration to the three of us as well. So tell us how this all happened. Let's get into it.
Well, thank you very much, Mary Fran and Chicks. And it was a very organized process. It's not like anywhere.
Ever. It was like 5
Everything
10
blows up around me as I say that. No, it was definitely, I always said years ago when I was teaching third grade in a really, really tough district in Kansas City that was the hardest thing I ever did. Woo! And then the blindness diagnosis was the hardest thing that I ever did. And then publishing a book about all of that, I think, has now become the hardest thing I ever did. Goodness gracious. No, it was an incredible experience. But here's the thing. You know, we all talk about having a passion for what you do, especially in some of the lines of work that we're in, that there's not a whole lot of kudos and return on investment right away, especially in the very beginning. But it was literally passion that fueled the energy that you need to take on something like this. And the whole, where the passion came in was, this is the resource that I wished someone handed me on diagnosis day 19 years ago, and even the second one 15 years ago when my boys were diagnosed as babies. Because back then I was told, good luck. They said, I don't know what to tell you with a blind child. I don't know what to tell you. Good luck. And that's okay for 19 years ago and 15 years ago. But the fact that 2 years ago, I got another message from a mom with getting the diagnosis that was told the same thing, when the internet is alive and well now, social media, you know, you think everybody's seeing your stuff all the time, all over social media, and they must not be, for these messages to still be delivered like this. So anyway, that was the whole reason. This thing started out as a little pamphlet that I wanted the retina specialist to hand the family when they said, your child is blind. Here's a resource that makes it not so bad. You know, the news isn't that devastating. Get in touch with these people, read these stories. And then it just kind of took on a world of its own to where it is now, as I'm so proud that it became a number one new release on Amazon. Both Kindle hit that and paperback hit that when they launched last week. So it's cool stuff.
It's really cool.
Phenomenal. It's amazing.
So Kristen, you just mentioned Amazon, and this is my big question for you, is you had a lot of choices when you decided to write the book and how you were going to publish the book. And with those decisions, like, what drove you to go to Amazon and have them do the publishing for you publishing yourself versus trying to seek out a publisher and go that route, or even choosing another platform to publish on versus having Amazon do all of that for you?
Yeah. So here's the disclaimer. On this journey, since the day my son was diagnosed, people and things pop into this path that can only be described as no coincidence. So that's the disclaimer behind all of this. And I believe that if you look for the positive things, you find them, they happen upon you. So years ago, I had to switch to a more positive perception of all of this. So I was able to notice that, okay, back in, I think it was third or fourth grade that Michael was in, my oldest blind son, my oldest son that is blind. Someone that did a critique of the book, that was the only critique she had for me, was I'm always saying, because I'm used to being in the sighted world, blind son, as opposed to the person first. And my son sings a song about acknowledging the person first, blind a second. So it all just, you know, hit me. So anyway, there's a Kristen Smedley Wild tangent just for you. Yeah. Good luck with the show notes, Mary Fran.
Come on. Yeah,
anyway,
we don't have all day.
Back in third or fourth grade, it was Diary of a Wimpy Kid. Remember that goofy?
Yes, that series. Yep.
Okay. Sure. So back then I was reading a bunch of the books that my kids were reading to see what they were reading. Well, that book came out in the Scholastic Book News, you know, in the public school, and every single kid in the class ordered that book, and Michael couldn't get a version that was accessible. We couldn't get a Braille copy. We couldn't even get the electronic Braille copy. Things weren't moving as fast as they are now. And at that point, we had to wait for this incredible program called Bookshare, where authors and copywriters and all that have this deal with a nonprofit organization where anyone can get the print book, upload it, scan it, upload it to Bookshare, and then blind children can get in there and access the book. But you had to wait on somebody to upload it. I was so frustrated, and I had in the back of my mind that I wanted to do a book. At the time, it was going to be a children's book. So it was just, you know, but I have three little kids. Two of them are blind. IEPs, started a nonprofit organization that went global faster than we thought. So it kind of all got on the back burner. But that was always in the back of my mind. It was that accessibility piece. So when, you know, fast forward a few years when I was ready to go with the book, I had a decision to make. And this is where the whole no coincidences comes into play. You know, people say you are a more esteemed, if you will, author if you have a publishing company behind you. Self-publishing was growing at such a rapid pace. And people like Hal Elrod, you know, and Lewis Howes, a lot of people were self-publishing and showing that, hey, if you do it right, it's just as equal a platform. So I chose to go a little bit with the risk of self-publishing because I wanted to know for myself before I started barking at the publishing community of the hang-ups in getting Braille and accessible versions. I needed to know for myself what the process was, and what a better way to learn the process than to do it yourself. Bang your head against the wall a couple times trying to figure it out as you go. So making that decision just to learn the process of where all the problems are, open, literally, no pun intended, open my eyes to where there are a lot of problems. And now that's the second part of this battle journey that I did not anticipate, is now tackling those huge accessibility issues.
For blindness, in order to get a Braille version of the book, correct?
Right, okay. Right.
Yeah. So, well, for people who are listening who are interested in writing a book and publishing and all that, you and I have had, and we've talked a lot about the process as you went through this, because it really is, it can be incredibly overwhelming. I kind of went through the same thing about, do I self-publish? Do I put it out to publishers? All that kind of stuff. And you know, it's a lot of it is a matter of choice. A lot of it is, for me, I have no patience, none whatsoever. So to have to query publishers and then wait for somebody, you know, to read your query letter that's on the bottom of a pile of a million query letters, mm-hmm. and then maybe get back to you. And then maybe, you know, if you're lucky enough to be picked up, it's a year and a half, 2 years for publication. It's a long process mm-hmm. if you're fortunate enough to be picked up by a traditional publisher. So for someone like you, and for me and for a lot of people who has information that they really want to share, that this is about sharing information, and for you, like having it be a resource, really and truly the quickest way to get that information into the hands of other people is to self-publish.
Yeah, but I will say this. I started this with a goal of a dream of being picked up by a publisher.
Right.
And I let that guide the whole process. So in the very beginning, I did a pitch letter. I did the 10-page pitch letter that if you go on, I mean, I was like Googling, how do you do a pitch, right? And I did the outline. I did the who is the audience? What are the competitive books in the space? What are some statistics that I can put the meat behind why this is a necessary project? I did all of it like I wrote this thing out like I was pitching to be on Oprah's Super Soul mm-hmm. Sunday. And be interviewed by her as an author. I wanted to be professional and really solve a problem from the very beginning. Because the last thing I wanted was to just put something out there that was going to get, you know, maybe some attention in the blink of an eye and then be gone. Because this work was way too important to me that I wanted it to go along in the right way. So I did take a look at it from that angle from the very beginning and started the self-publishing journey and figured, hey, if somebody picks it up, all the better.
Well, and the two things aren't mutually exclusive. I mean, you self-publish, mm-hmm. but you can still sell that book to a publisher. In other words, sure. someone could pick it up. Mm-hmm. You know, Random House or whomever could come to you tomorrow and say, look, this is phenomenal. It's getting great press. It's getting whatever. Because in self-publishing, you still retain all of the rights to your work. So I think mm-hmm. for me, the benefit of self-publishing, and I think you're finding that too, is that you get to have your book out there and you get to build this community and this awareness and your brand and what you're trying to get out there. And you kind of have to do that anyway, because even people that I know who are with traditional publishers, the marketing still falls on them. You're not getting major yep. book tours, you know? I mean, I use J.K. Rowling as an example all the mm-hmm. time. Unless you're her, you're not getting a book tour and you're not making a lot of money off a book. It just doesn't happen that way. But the potential to sell your book to a publisher still exists if you self-publish, and the advantage is that you get the thing out there already. And I think that is going to work for you too.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things in there, like in this process. And this is advice to somebody that's looking to get their book out there and do it self-publishing. You got to be in it for the long haul. I mean,
yes.
there were so many, you know, writing the book, and I read this and heard this on 1,000 podcasts about self-publishing and writing in general. Writing the book is only half the work. It's hard, but that's only half of it. Then getting it out there, and you have to be okay with that. There's just not enough hours in the day. There just isn't. I had to let go of some of how I saw this the way I wanted it to go. And even in the past 3 days, I mean, now we're stuck with a snow day here when my kids are home, and you know, things get in the way. But I think that if it's along the lines of my set extraordinary expectations thing, if you set out to do it in a remarkable way where you're going to make a difference and you're going to have an impact far and wide, and you're going to do everything you can, yeah, some of the things aren't going to work out, but you have plan B, plan C, plan D, all in the works. And you're right, Mary Fran, I think the biggest misconception in reading and writing books is people think that the publisher is doing all of your marketing and you sit there at your feet up with a nice drink at the pool while they're taking, and they're not.
No.
So what another great way to learn about marketing and all of that than to do this, you know, even if it's for the first one and then hope that a publisher picks up the second one, because you have to do all the marketing anyway.
Yeah, you do.
Kristen, I feel like I've been there with you from the beginning, but I think for our listeners, take it back a couple of steps before we even get to hit the publish button. I have an idea. I really think it would make a great book. How do I even start formulating what an outline of a book would even look like?
Well, you know, it's funny. I always say I was supposed to be a third grade teacher, and then my life went awry and I'm not in that business anymore, but I actually am. And especially with writing the book, it's like a lesson plan. It's like when you're going to do a speech. It's like when you're going to make a video to put on social media about your business. You got to think about What is it that you know that you want an audience to know? What is the problem that's out there that you're going to solve, right? So that's the first thing. What's the objective, essentially? Mm-hmm. And then, honestly, you just have to make really good content. We hear it all the time, right? Your social media stuff, people are only going to share it if it's good content. But with a book, at least for me, because I tend to be a Virgo perfectionist, I wanted a very good piece of content because it's very important to me. So I spent a ton of time writing, rewriting, doing the outline in the very beginning. And I mean, here we go again with the power of the mastermind that us four chicks were in. If you remember back that year when I was putting it all together, I'm like, what do you think about this idea? What do you think about this idea? And actually, it was you guys that changed the whole mechanics of it. Because if you remember, when I first wanted to tell the stories of these folks, I was telling it in my point of view, in the third person of them. I interviewed them, and then I was going to share their story in third person. Mm-hmm. And you guys were like, no, figure out a way to summarize the interview of their own words. And I think that was the most powerful thing. So backing up to your question about how do you begin, you really have to begin with, in my opinion, what is the problem that you're going to solve?
That's so key.
Yes, it's, even if it's your story that you want to share because you had an epic story, what is the problem? Is somebody else going through that problem, and how can you solve it?
Yeah, why does anybody else care?
Exactly.
You have to have that in the back of your mind when you're writing. I mean, and obviously, I think when you're writing anything, you kind of have to decide what your goals are. I mean, yeah. Are you trying to get this out there to a wider community? Is this, I mean, people self-publish like their family histories all the time, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But you have to be aware going in. And like you said, Kristen, if you envision this having a wider a hit for people, you have to figure out why they should care. You have to give them a reason to care.
Yeah.
And then another
value piece.
Yeah, exactly, mm-hmm. Kath. Value. What's the value for anybody else that's not you? Mm-hmm. Obviously, well, it's valuable to you.
I think you have to look at it too as this is part of your brand and who you are. And that this is a passion project, but yet this is the foundation of who Kristen Smedley is and who Thriving Blind is. So anything that you do, you're, like you just said, this is part of your brand. So all of this has to be recognizable as you.
Yeah. Very, yeah.
And so you have to solve a problem in order for any business to be successful. And that's exactly what you're doing, is your brand is now solving a problem for thousands of other people.
Now, step two in that, and again, no coincidences that I ended up on a Zoom call with John Lee Dumas was on. And I was talking about my nonprofit at the time. Well, I still have it, but at that moment I was talking about my nonprofit, and he was talking about the avatar that we often talk about here on the Four Chicks. Who are you talking to? And I said to him, you know, I was building my team and giving a lot of responsibility to my nonprofit team because I was just overwhelmed. And I had somebody else taking the calls from these moms that were getting the diagnosis of blindness because it was taking so much of my emotion and my time investing in those folks. And he said, put all those other tasks off on other people of your team, but you're the one that has to take those calls. You're the one that's been there. Your whole mission is about improving their lives. Don't give that call to somebody else. Be their first point of contact and speak to them. Then we got into my conversation about the book that I had the idea at the time, and he was like, speak to that mom. Let me tell you how hard that was in the past 2 years to keep that mom, that avatar, as my number one audience, because, you know, I've had people come to me and say, you got to broaden this because this is really helpful for divorce. This is really helpful for any special needs child. But sticking to just that one avatar, I believe is why this has gotten so successful so fast, because those moms need it. And keeping the message for them somehow then translates to everybody else, because it was very direct, and it was really, it's like holding their hand, mm-hmm. right? And then I reached out to those moms, moms that just got the blindness diagnosis, 50 of them did an initial, I sent them half of the book to say, am I landing on my goals that I set for it? And I gave them the goals. Every single one of them that got back to me said yes, because it was written specifically for them and those goals. That's awesome. But very important.
Kristen, when I wrote my review, which Amazon has not put up yet, much to my
bane of her existence,
I am very competitive, as you know, and I wanted to be the first one, and I wasn't.
It's the first. I was like, well, mine's up there first. I don't know what you're talking about. I know Robin's really mad.
That just really rocked my world. But anyway, listeners.
That'll be Four Chicks episode 52. What's up, Amazon? What's your deal?
So anyway, I'll eventually get over this crush, but I mean, it's been really stressful. Anyway, what I said in this beautiful review that I wrote was, this is not only a book, though, you've accomplished your goal in terms of reaching your target audience and that avatar, and you did it gracefully and very successfully. But this book is also something that I think every HR person in the world should read. And I did include that in my review because you have transformed the perception of blindness through this book. And it is no longer something that, and I have an uncle who has been blind for I don't know how many years. He was a mechanic. And so he did have to go on disability. I mean, he could not work as a mechanic, but he's highly intelligent. He's very well read. He has all the audiobooks and everything. But when he went blind, his life ended in terms of how he knew it. You know, he didn't work anymore. He didn't do the things that all of these people are doing. Now, you know, this was 50 years ago. The opportunities weren't there. But
it's still happening. You're right. And it's still happening.
And now, just through your book, that you have proven that that doesn't have to be the case. I mean, was it Lonnie that mows the lawn?
Yeah.
I mean, he mows the lawn on a riding lawnmower. So, I mean, it's just, to me, every person in the HR sector should, and recruiters, like, I think you have an opportunity to market to those audiences, because even though you've reached the goal with the ideal avatar, those are people that this needs to be in the hands of, because they need to recognize that just because someone is blind does not mean they're not capable of doing amazing things and doing the job that they need to have done.
And I appreciate that. And that was one of the biggest goals, was changing perceptions of blindness, because it's perception of blindness that's screwing up the blind community, that they're not getting the opportunities, that bias exists. Kirk Adams talks about it in the book. He's the CEO of the American Foundation of the Blind. Mm-hmm. And he talks about the struggle that blind people go through when they're interviewing for a job. They send in the resume. Do you put in that you're blind or not? Okay. He didn't put it in. He got all these calls. He does the call. Amazing. Walks into the interview and instantaneously they're shut down. They think they can't handle a blind person there. They think it's expensive to make things accessible. They think it's going to be too hard. And what they don't realize is that bias is killing it. You know, mm-hmm. It doesn't take that much of accommodation. And for the probably 99.9% of the blind folks that are going into the workforce, they figure out the accommodation on their own. They don't even have to involve many people in it. I know, I watch my boys. They have figured stuff out from the time they were born. It's us. It's the sighted community that has the bias and the problem. And we are the problem for the blind community, not blindness.
Kristen, I think you just hit the nail on the head too, because for Kirk, when he went into these interviews and they saw he was blind and they immediately shut it down. He didn't get the job because of that. We're living in a society where discrimination is forefront, and this is just a form of that. So you know, through the book, you have an opportunity to break those barriers. I think you've done it actually with the content of the book, but now it just has to get into the right hands so that people can really understand that those barriers are very unrealistic and they are truly discriminating in an inappropriate way.
So, you know, it's funny you talk about that. I was listening to, and I wish I could remember who the person was, but I was listening to TED Radio Hour podcast the other day when I was getting ready to, this is so weird. I was getting ready to go to the gala where Kirk and Eric Weinmayer and Tom Lukowski, three guys in the book, were all in DC when I was there last week. But I was listening to TED Radio Hour, and they highlight a few speakers from TED Talks. And the one, I'll look it up so we can put it in the show notes, but the one was talking about this whole bias with employers. And there's this big push now to have, and Kirk said it when I interviewed him, interviewers should be blindfolded. And they should have some kind, you know, this took it a step further. They're trying to come up with a system now to eliminate all bias, that you can't see color, you can't see disability, you can't, and how, and it's exactly right. It's exactly how it should go. How they figure it out, I don't know. They'd have to almost do like a scramble of a computer generated voice. You know, there'd have to be a lot of things built in, because women are subject to this, you know, all disabilities, all different types of communities. It is a huge problem. So yeah, tackling it for the blind community could open, you know, knock down all those barriers for all these other communities. You're right. Crazy to think about that, right?
No, mm-hmm. For sure. You know, in looking at this whole thing, you know, we're talking about the mechanics of publishing the book, but again, it really all comes back to your message. And I think you were talking about your niche, and Robin kind of went on to that next level. I think if you are in doing anything, if you are doing a brand, if you're doing a book, if you're doing a whatever, you start out with that really narrow perspective, mm-hmm. because those are the people that are going to immediately resonate with what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But then once that gets out there, the effects that ripple effect, like mm-hmm. you're throwing this book into the pond of the blind community right now, because that's where it's going to land. But the ripple effects of that can be profound, because really what you talk about over and over again is setting extraordinary expectations. And in your boy's world and the world that you're trying to create, blindness becomes a part of the equation, but not the defining part of the equation.
Yeah. And in the background, as I say.
Yeah, exactly. These people that you have chosen to highlight, who you sought out really to be resources and examples for your son, you know, they're examples for everyone, and that will resonate eventually. But I think you were smart in going to the blind community initially. That's the problem you were trying to solve, but it goes so far beyond that, and that will evolve naturally as people start to talk about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and honestly, the reason that I chose the 13 that I chose, I mean, it's 12 stories, and then Eric Weimer, and I mentioned he did the foreword, and I mentioned him he was my first role model outside of my son. I wanted to specifically go with a gamut. So we have everybody from a former attorney who's now a stay-at-home dad to the mountain climber that does all this crazy ass stuff that I'm like, don't ever let my boys be on your email list, dude, mm-hmm. because please delete them. I don't need them to know. But I wanted it, and I did that for a reason. And this is an interesting lesson in, you know, critics can be annoying, and I mean, toxic people are toxic. I'm not talking about toxic. I'm talking about some people that are critical. Listen to them with one ear, not both, and take some of it into your mind, not necessarily your heart, because there are people that have criticized me and people like me in the blind community saying, you know, the cynical people that go, oh, they're the super blind family, that they have to go achieve greatness because they're blind. I'm not achieving greatness because my kids are blind. We just have greatness in us, and it's, you know, to whom much is given, much is expected, is the way I look at it with my kids, right? Mm-hmm. Not everybody has to go climb a mountain. I'm not going on a damn mountain, thank you very much. There are some people who, look, I was solely a stay-at-home mom for 14 years. That was my number one job. So there are people that run the gamut. You can make, but the point is, make your choices about your life. Don't have life deciding what your choices are going to be. And if you choose to climb that mountain, go for it. And if you're blind, you can still do it. If you choose to be a stay-at-home dad, look at the story of Larry Woody talking about an auto mechanic, Robin. He was an auto mechanic, goes blind. The guy he worked for fires him because he says, how can you possibly do this? You know, Larry sat down and was pissed about it for about 5 minutes, and then goes and learns how to be an auto mechanic without sight. And he was so frustrated, he opens his own shop and invites the former boss to his successful business and says, look what I did. And you know what the most beautiful part of that story is? That the boss said to him, wow, I had no idea. Congratulations, and thank you for changing my perspective. There's the whole glorious picture when it's full circle, right? It's not just about I'll show them. It's changing their mind and then having that person be big enough and respectful enough to say, good for you. And he became the guy's biggest competitor. Then he goes on to then have a deaf person come and work for him. I'm like, Larry, you're killing me here. I'm like, how is this person real? Right. But those kinds of, that's where the lessons transcend blindness, disability. I mean, it's that those are the ones that are human nature. If we would do things a little bit differently, what kind of world would we live in?
Yeah. So Kristen, we've talked a lot about the book and the process and the stories within the book and how impactful it is, but behind the scenes, I know you've had challenges. So what were, just tell us the biggest challenge or biggest frustration that you had. And then also tell us what your favorite part of this journey has been.
You know, with all the, it was hard for me. If you think that you don't have you can't possibly write a book, please remember this face, because my girlfriends and I from high school joke that all of my high school English teachers probably need oxygen, that they see that I'm an author on Amazon. I'm not a book writer. I was just not an author that was.
So let me just say that phrase right there sums that up. I'm not a book writer. Clearly.
Yeah. Clearly I need an editor. Because author is the word, Kristen.
But we all do.
But I mean, I'm a speaker and I have all these other talents. So for me to sit down and write this thing, to follow the objectives and follow the plan, and then, hey, how about you throw in that it's somebody else's story you're telling? That was the hardest thing for me, to be able to tell these folks' stories in their voice, with the amazing, extraordinary greatness that's in each one of them, and get what I felt in having my interviews with them and meeting them in person, to get what I felt about them out onto the pages was excruciating. And I went back to it. I don't even know how many times I had to go back and edit. And honestly, like I said before, it was when you guys said, stop using your voice to do their voice. Let their voice be itself was the most beautiful part.
Yeah, you know, but that was hard. You have an obligation. You do have that obligation to those people. So that in and of itself, you know, it wasn't just your words. It wasn't just your story. So you've done an incredible job in both allowing their voices to shine through and being respectful and honoring and highlighting their stories, which is hard when you have that obligation as a writer.
Yeah.
And you know,
the other thing was I interviewed them, right? So I recorded the interview and then I went from there to generate the content. I didn't know how I was going to generate the content. I just wanted to get the interviews down. Oh my God. Then I'm like, you know, some of them, they're pretty amazing, important. I mean, like Scott McIntyre is a former American Idol finalist and his platform is ginormous and he's very well known. And I'm going to get on the phone with him and do an interview. And I've never done this before. I was talk about fear. I was scared out of my mind. And as luck would have it, my first interview was Diane Barbarian, who's the Ironman competitor in the book that is so dang hilarious. She was my first one. And I'm like, she put all of my fears completely to rest, because my favorite thing about her was I was so scared about failing, and she goes, I said, I can't believe that you're agreeing to be in this book. I've never written one and you're the first person I'm talking to about this, and I don't know what I'm doing. And she said to me, are you kidding? Now this is a woman that's incredibly successful. Are you kidding? She goes, I was so excited to get the invitation because the last book I was in was about being a failure. Oh, and no. You're asking me about being in one that says success on it.
I loved that part. I loved that part in the book.
She's hilarious. And then it turns out as we got to talking that she coached teams that I played soccer against when I was in high school. Isn't that wild? She was a soccer coach. But anyway, so that was, I had to get over my fear of the fact that I had never done this before and I might be wasting these folks' time. And then I got, when I let it go and got the first few under my belt, by the time I got to Chris Downey, who's the blind architect, he is so in demand as a blind architect than he was as a sighted architect that I literally had 19 minutes to do this interview from soup to nuts, from, hey, Chris, how you doing? I'm hitting record, to hanging up. And he was one of my final ones. And I finally had it down to a science of just getting the information, stop all the fluff around it. Thank you very much. And on to the next one. But like, I'm sweating just thinking about it because it was such a freaking process.
Is your nose sweating? Well, that takes us back, doesn't it, kids?
That takes us back to the first episode of The Four Chicks. That was the greatest hashtag ever. Oh, tune into the first episode. It all started with a pyramid, and you can hear all about Robin's nose sweating.
Well, Kristen, we couldn't be more proud of you. I mean, seriously, not just because professionally it is a life-changing book, but personally, we've been there from the beginning, and we saw the ups and downs. We strapped in, we put the roll bar down, the crash helmet, and we were on the ride with you, and we couldn't be more proud of you.
Yeah, oh, thanks. Absolutely. I'm so proud of us. I'm so proud of the four of us that you know, got this thing going. You guys kept pushing me along, giving me the feedback. I mean, I think I texted Mary Fran a couple of times close to midnight saying, just look at this one sentence. I can't figure it out. And boom. No, it's been great.
But you know what? It was a labor of love for you. And that shows so clearly in the writing and in the message. And as I said, it's really a transcendent book. It serves the blind community so well, but it serves the rest of us too on a multitude of levels, on showing people to, you know, not to limit both other people and ourselves, you know, limiting people because of our determination of what they may or may not be capable of is so wrong, just as it is as when we limit ourselves on the basis of what we think we may or may not be capable of. Because I know as a writer and you as a writer, there were times where you thought, I'm never going to be able to do this. Yep. And yet here it is. So, you know, it's wonderful in all of the right ways. And I urge everybody to go out and pick up a copy. Is there anything else you want to add about this other than we need to tell people it's on Amazon available, but anything you want to add here before we wrap this up?
The only thing I would say, the title. Oh yes, yeah. So the full title is Thriving Blind, Stories of Real People Succeeding Without Sight, because they are real people. And I wanted that right in the title. But the other thing that I will mention is I fully understand that blindness is a heavy topic. It is. I mean, I sit here and smile now. There was just a week and a half ago, I was back in the pit that it is heavy, because when you start to think about, you know, my son, he's switching colleges and there were some other things that were happening. It's a heavy topic. So I know when a listener hearing that there are 13 of these stories of a heavy topic, I will say this, I did it in Kristen Smedley's brain. That's how it was created. So it is light. It is in small chunks. The lessons are crystal clear that you get out of it. And I hold the reader's hand going into each story with my light take on why I think this person is amazing. And then it's a very quick summary from them of what their condition is, what they used to do, what they do now. And I end every single chapter, I'm going to end up in tears because I was raised this way. Every single chapter ends with the bright side. Mm-hmm. Because my life is one that my mom would always say, you got to find the bright side. You got to find the silver lining. That's how it carries you with the energy to go the next step and figure out what the mess is. So every single one of their chapters has one little blurb of what the bright side is in them being a person that is blind. And I think that's the biggest Kristen Smedley factor in the book that makes it digestible and makes people walk away with some really cool lessons.
It's profound and it's beautiful. And I should have mentioned this earlier because we are wrapping up, but I just want to talk for a second about the cover. We talked a lot about mastermind about the cover of the book. And I said to you a while back when you were talking about that, because you had that image of that eye was a poster that was behind you. When we did our mastermind,
We've been looking at that eye for how long?
I couldn't take my eyes off of it, quite literally my own eyes off of that. And you ended up putting it on the cover. Just tell us a little bit about that and what that means.
Yeah, and you know what, Mary Fran, this is a story that we should share independently somehow, figure out a way to get this story out, because it is such a testament to like what Robin always talks about with branding and keeping your, and we talked about your, you know, your objectives and your avatar. When you said to me that day, Kristen, that picture is always in the background when you're doing these live things, these video things, that should be in there somehow. it's just, it's another one of those non-coincidence things that this, the picture of the eye was made at one of the first ever fundraising events for my nonprofit. And I had I just had this idea that I wanted everyone in that room that was close to me to invest in the mission of the Curing Retinal Blindness Foundation for the long haul, because this mission is a marathon. It is not a sprint. Restoring vision is not a sprint. Changing perceptions of blindness is not a sprint. I needed people's buy-in from the beginning to stay with me. And the only way the third grade teacher in me could think to have that happen was dip your thumb in some poster paint and put your thumbprint on the mission. And that's what all of those little circles are. I mean, there's a congressman.
It makes me cry. I get filled up every time you tell this story.
Yeah, like my mom is in there. There's a congressman in there. There are big wigs in my town. There are moms that helped me in the PTO. I mean, my kids are in there. Everyone was in it for the long haul. So I had that painting behind me all the time to be part of my brand, that this is what I do. And it was interesting. And then when it came time for the cover, I wanted this book to also be an awareness tool for the foundation, because it is a very hard line that I walk. I preach about and teach about changing perceptions of blindness, and blindness is okay. But I also work in the research field to give blind people options for vision. Because in my opinion, everyone on this planet deserves an option for a different life if they want it. Okay, so how do you merge those two worlds that have been siloed for years and almost at war with each other? This, the Curing Retinal Blindness Foundation, was the way that we did that with the Thriving Blind book. So now they're all in one piece. It's an awareness tool, it's a fundraiser, and it's an educational piece. And for those that have the book, in the very back of the book is the about the cover story, because, and this actually also builds in the power of a network. I've been building my network and giving to my network for 9 years now. Well, actually, when you look at the book, it's my whole life. Because that cover, the painting was designed by my high school soccer teammate's son, that's an artist, and it was all put together as a graphic art for a cover by somebody I went all through elementary school with, that we reconnected on Facebook, and it was edited by my sixth grade English teacher.
I love it.
Crazy.
It's phenomenal.
Keep that network.
From start to finish.
Yeah. Kristen, you're an example of anyone who has a passion can do anything. I mean, if you set out to set extraordinary expectations based on your passion and your drive to help others, and you succeeded.
You exceeded.
You exceeded the extraordinary expectations. I don't even know how to say it, but my whole point in saying what I'm saying is that you've now become a role model, not only for the blind community, but for anyone who is passionate about something and has a vision to now know they can accomplish that because you did.
Oh, well, I appreciate it. It really is. If Kristen Smedley can do it, I swear to Jesus, anybody can do it, because this is like Crazyville over here, and connect with the right folks and help guide your work. But it's good stuff. I'm glad the four chicks were a part of the whole thing.
Oh, so
we couldn't be happier. Yeah. We couldn't be happier. Awesome. So on that note, it's probably time to wind up, but we want to, first of all, tell you again that we are so incredibly proud of you. This is a beautiful book from start to finish. It is hopeful. It is inspirational. I urge everybody who's listening to go to Amazon, get out there, pick up a copy, leave Kristen a review, and it will be a 5-star review because it just can't be anything else. It's an amazing piece. And to everybody, you'll hear our normal plea to visit us on that social thing, catch up with us there, leave us a review on iTunes. We've got a ton more good stuff coming your way with great guests. And actually, as you've seen today, we're pretty cool ourselves.
Not so shabby.
So tune in next time for the next episode of Four Chicks Chatting. Bye-bye.
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 Thanks for listening to our chicks. Want to learn how to create your own chick chat? Head to our website, chickschatting.com. Be sure to join our chats on that social thing, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.